corrupted nerds ensconced in the twilight of their bedroom, whether it be in Paris, Singapore, Lagos, Bucharest, or indeed even Sydney.
And from Sydney, or close to it, welcome to Corrupted Nerds Conversations, Episode 4. I'm still Gerion. And today, the cloud could run out of steam, and if it does, it's your fault. As we heard last time, everything's moving to the cloud, into data centres. So, it's about the data centres using too much power? No, it's all the wireless.
The energy efficiency of telecommunications and ICT gets worse the closer you get to the household. The big power consumption component resides in how you get into the cloud, that is wireless access. Millions of people, hundreds of thousands of base stations.
And in the third world, many of those base stations aren't even on the electricity grid because it's too unreliable.
Thousands of base stations are powered by diesel generators going for 24/7.
So add to that the global growth rates and have we got a problem? You bet. This is Corrupted Nerds, a podcast about information, power, security and all the cybers in a global internet revolution that's changing everything. Well, a quick announcement to kick off with. Corrupted Nerds is now in the Apple iTunes store. So if you use one of the fruity devices, either the jab screen phone or the fondle slab, search for Corrupted Nerds and hit the button, and also give it a rating and tell your friends. Well, our guest today is Dr. Kerry Hinton, one of the research fellows at the Centre for Energy Efficient Telecommunications, or SEET, at the University of Melbourne. It's a partnership between the university, Alcatel-Lucent's Bell Labs, yes, the one founded by Alexander Graham Bell, and the Victorian state government. In a weird coincidence, Dr. Hinton and I were actually at university together, back when everything was in Roman numerals. Anyway, SEET has been modelling the energy consumption of the cloud, and in today's conversation, you'll hear how we really do face the risk of not having enough power to go around, and about our options for doing something about it. This interview with Dr. Kerry Hinton was recorded in Sydney, Australia on the 9th of April, 2013. Kerry, the question here is obviously about energy. I thought the data centres were the problem here because we had all these rooms full of computers and unless we kept them air-conditioned to within an inch of their life, the whole thing shut down, as happened to a large bank not that long ago. But no, that's not the answer?
In the early days, it most probably was the data centres. When people first started looking at cloud, because the idea back in those days was that the original version of cloud was that you have a company with lots and lots of computers. These are old desktop-type computers. And they'd be networked into some little server sitting in the far corner of the room. And
that's your classic client-server model,
that's right. And so when people started looking at cloud services, they started then looking at, well, what kind of energy savings can we make if we replace that crappy little piece of equipment in the corner with a decent shared resource in a data centre, which is optimised to within an inch of its life, and we replace all these power-hungry desktops with just a thin client-type desktop computer. And so when you did the calculations based on that, it all came out quite nicely. You could see that by spreading the power consumed in the data centre across many, many, many customers who would just basically log on and use facilities as they needed, you could reduce the overall carbon footprint of enterprises using the cloud compared to what they did beforehand.
And presumably the wave of virtualisation of data centres helped there too, because I'm guessing it's like fixed and variable cost. There's a kind of fixed cost of having a machine turned on and variable cost for what it's doing.
Exactly.
So you keep it running flat out if you can.
Yep. And the same goes for energy. So instead of having the fixed cost of the server sitting in the corner running 24/7, you replace that by sharing the energy cost in the data centre, which is a fair way away. But in addition to that, because data centres are so well designed in terms of energy efficiency, because power is such a big part of their operational costs, you can actually get substantial savings by sharing that power load across, or that power cost across all the customers who use the data centre. So in the early days, that was good. And the first round of industry papers that were produced promoting cloud services focused on that enterprise access of cloud using wired connections, all this stuff. So that was all great. But then Greenpeace came along, kind of upset the apple cart a bit, and what they basically said was, let's look at these data centres and see how they're powered. And so they did a bit of homework, and they came to the conclusion that many companies power their data centres using dirty coal. And so their first couple of papers came out saying, you know, are data centres that clean and all this kind of stuff. And that kind of, in a historical sense, focused the attention on data centres. And so, of course, the data centre providers and the cloud providers then pushed back and started saying, well, look, you've got the numbers wrong, or our data centres are better than other people's data centres, or we're using solar power in the coming years, or we're going to put data centres where it's colder and things like that to make it their energy efficiency improve.
If I can roll back on that for a bit. I mean, you said they're powering, or some of them at least, were powering their data centres with dirty coal. I mean, don't you just buy power from the grid? Where it comes from really is not directly under your control unless you decide to move to Oregon and park yourself next to a river or something.
That's right. In fact, what would happen is that companies in the early days would site their data centres in places where power was cheap. And there were cases in the United States where cheap power came from coal-fired power stations. So in that case, the cheap power was dirty. Okay, and there are specific examples given in some of the Greenpeace documents about where the power is coming from, and basically pinning it down to a particular state in the United States which had a contract with a company that used coal. Okay, so that was kind of phase one of the discussion and the debate. Now, while that was going on, things were changing. What was happening was that companies were realising that cloud services weren't just good for companies, they were good for individuals. And so we've seen the evolution towards things like Google Docs or Microsoft 365 Office applications and stuff like that, in which the market for these products is not by large corporations, it's you and me and the people down the street. In fact, as I arrived at Sydney Airport this morning, I saw an advert for Microsoft 365, no matter where you are, do your personal data processing, it's with you all the time kind of thing. So that was one thing. They were moving from the corporate market to the kind of customer consumer market. The other thing that was occurring at the same time, which kind of went under the radar insofar as this debate about power being consumed by cloud computing, was that we were migrating to wireless access. And so instead of having a whole range of desktops that were all plugged into the wall, we're moving towards a situation where you have a laptop or you have a tablet. And in a lot of tablets, there is no Ethernet plug. There's no wired. It's all assumed Wi-Fi or 3G or 4G. So what we noticed at Melbourne University, the Centre of Energy Efficient Telecommunications, is that the debate had been focused on this issue about coal-fired power stations and where the power comes from data centres. But this argument had missed the evolution towards wireless access because of the convenience and the fact that everybody owns a mobile phone. So we thought, OK, let's go back and readdress the question of how clean or how energy-hungry is the cloud, and take into account two factors. One, the move towards wireless access everywhere, and two, the move from enterprise to consumer market for cloud services. And so we then constructed a power consumption model for this newer evolution of cloud, and sure enough, what we found was that the data centre becomes less than 10% of the power consumption. The big power consumption component resides in how you get into the cloud, that is wireless access. Now, we've looked only at wireless access to cloud services. It's hard enough to get the numbers from the public domain for just that. We would like to extend this at some stage to look at wider access, but just right now, the numbers we can get from industry documents and forecasts is just for that area. But it's a kind of a test case. And the point that we see is that although the calculation we've done is just for basically wireless access to cloud services, as we move towards this concept of ubiquitous access to all of our services, and as more and more services migrate to the cloud, what's going to happen is that this issue of power consumption is going to grow and grow and grow and grow, because wireless access is really the least energy efficient way of getting into these services. And of the wireless access technologies, the ones which come in as the biggest transgressors in terms of power consumption are basically mobile phones and home Wi-Fi. And the two contributors there are the following. Mobile phones use large cell sizes. They provide a very broad area of coverage, and they use a lot of power to transmit the signal to cover that entire area. Okay? So that's the problem there. That's the large cell size. The reason that home Wi-Fi is not good is because you've got one or two people at most sharing that little Wi-Fi router in the corner, which is chewing about 10 or 12 watts. If you have a highly shared access, say, whole Wi-Fi hotspot like in a hotel or a Wi-Fi internet cafe or the airport, where a lot of people are sharing that, then the energy efficiency goes up because you're sharing infrastructure. So that points certain directions to try and improve the situation in terms of making wireless access to these services more energy efficient. Because at the end of the day, whether we like it or not, we're heading towards wireless.
Well, yes, I mean, the convenience is overpoweringly persuasive, shall we say. Look, I'll come back to what we do about this in a minute, but I want to nail down some of these numbers, because as you were describing that, I realised a lot of the assumptions in my head are clearly just wrong, and you know, I'm no newcomer to some of the technology. So a few random factoids here I'll pick up. 15 watts for a Wi-Fi access point doesn't sound a lot to me compared to the rest of the consumption of technology that is lying around the average home.
Ah, yeah. And in fact, by and large, the energy efficiency of telecommunications and ICT gets worse the closer you get to the household. Okay? So what you find, for example, in the calculation that we've done, is the core of the network, the metro and the core network that gets your information from your household or from your mobile phone into the data centre is less than 1% of the contribution. And that's because all the infrastructure in that big core network, like the heart of the network, is so heavily shared amongst so many people. As you head to the household, there is less and less sharing. Okay, now, if you want to look at the broader picture of energy efficiency across the spectrum of what we do in our houses, then you're right, the Wi-Fi router in the corner is not a real big-time killer component. It tends to be the set-top box, 35 watts on 24/7, the TVs and the stereo systems and the video recorders all left on standby 24/7, stuff like that. But we've been focusing just on wireless cloud because we see that's where an evolutionary step is occurring across the planet, actually, at the end of the day, in terms of accessing the kind of services that the internet provides.
All right, I get that. We've got this little transmitter sitting there doing its thing, whether even anyone's in the house or not. They're all off at work or whatever. Australia versus the US grid. I mean, the American grid was one of the first electricity grids around, and I am told by other people it's a bit rickety and an inefficient old thing. Is Australia much better in that regard?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on power grids. But in terms of where we focus our attention in terms of the energy efficiency issue, it actually is interesting talking about grids. So let's go back to the focus of what we've been studying at SEET. We looked at the data centres, and as I said, we found that that's less than 9% of the power consumption of wireless access to cloud services. And we looked at the access network, which is about 90%. So let's then start thinking about power grids. Okay, well, in terms of the data centres, there's a couple of things here. Firstly, the data centres, as we said a few minutes ago, these things are heavily optimised in terms of energy efficiency because the power bill is so great. It's within the interest in terms of keeping the cost down of the data centre owner to do the best.
And we're going to see that as a very clear line item.
Dead right.
Whereas at the other end, even if I'm really meticulous about my power usages at home, I'm not going to see 3G phone
dead
as
right.
a line item. Right.
You're dead right. In fact, that's the killer. That is the real killer, is that we're in a situation where, insofar as the data centres are concerned, we're talking about one big power bill, and the company running it can think about it. The companies like Cisco and Alcatel-Lucent, they're aware of this, and they're going flat chat trying to improve these technologies and all that stuff, okay? But when we go to the access network, we've got millions of people, hundreds of thousands of base stations, dozens and dozens of different models of mobile phones and tablets and laptops and all this stuff.
And everyone wants it on $19 on their plan each month.
Yep, and the whole market dynamic is different. Okay, so when you go down the street and you buy a mobile phone or you buy a laptop or something other, the issue of where's energy efficiency in this is just not even a part of the equation. As you said, you wouldn't even notice it in your phone bill. So, for example, when we pay for that little router sitting in the corner of our house, we wouldn't see that. You know, compared to the fridge or the stove or the air conditioner, wouldn't see it, right? Same with the phone bill the power bill that the phone companies get. Their base stations are a big component, but they've got lots of other things competing. They've got these huge telephone exchanges. They've got office blocks, all this stuff competing in terms of what's the big part of the power bill. But what we see is this. It's a classic case of fleas on an elephant. One person's power bill, as a consequence of their Wi-Fi router, is just one little flea where we've got billions and billions of these around the planet and it all adds up. Okay, and ultimately, it becomes a really big issue. And so trying to tackle this, the fact that this power consumption is a mass of lots and lots of little contributions, makes it really difficult to handle. And it gets a little bit worse than that, in that, for example, in a lot of countries, and let's go back to Australia compared to the United States in terms of their power grids. In Australia and the United States, we basically power up most of our mobile base stations using mains line power. Okay, there's a few which are not, they're solar and of course environmentally aware. Telstra make sure, the other telcos also make sure they do that. But there are countries like India, where the mains system is just not reliable enough, and thousands of base stations are powered by diesel generators going 24/7. And so in that case, what happens is that the company running the cloud service, they don't have any control over where the base station is through which you're going to connect to their services, okay? So they can optimise their data centres, they can optimise their software as much as they want, but we're talking about a part of the system or an ecosystem of cloud which is outside their control, and the control is smeared across many, many, many companies, and it's really difficult to get that as a kind of a unified approach to try and address this issue.
Okay, there's the problem. I can see that it's certainly not reached peak even here in the West. And you're shaking your head, but I mean, if we talk outside Western countries, the peak is still a long way off, and this is going to get a lot worse. What do we do about it?
Yeah, okay.
What can we do about it?
Yeah. Well, the thing that we can't do is tell people not to use mobile networks, okay, and wireless technology, because that's that. Although
telling people not to download.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So, we've got to think of another solution. My view is that the work that we've done to date indicates three paths, okay. One is to improve the wireless network technologies, in particular mobile access networks. And there are groups around the planet doing that. And one group which we are heavily involved in at the Centre of Energy Efficient Telecommunications is what's called Green Touch. Green Touch is an international consortium of many large telecommunication providers and telecommunication equipment vendors, for example, Alcatel Lucent, so a significant member of Green Touch. And this group is looking at the overall network and trying to improve the energy efficiency, and it has one group which is specialising in mobile access. The group that I'm involved with, we look at the core network, and so that's another part of the key network. So there is methods or technologies being developed which look at improving the technology. So that's one possibility. The next possibility is to shrink the size of the cells. Okay, that actually has a significant improvement in terms of energy efficiency. So, for example, if you look at the energy efficiency of a shared Wi-Fi hotspot, say, as I said, a hotel or an airport, it's much more energy efficient than, say, 3G. And the reason, key reason being, is that in the hotspot, you've actually got a small cell, a micro, often is the term often used, cell, small area coverage, and so the energy efficiency improved as compared to throwing out energy over this large area. Okay, so we try and reduce the size of the cells, and there are lots of products around which do that, and in fact Alcatel Lucent's light radio, that's a prime example of that kind of technology. Okay, so and the third thing we want to do is share infrastructure. The more we share infrastructure, the more we spread the power across many, many users, and that's why, for example, the home Wi-Fi connection, although it is a small cell Wi-Fi connection, it's relatively energy inefficient because you've got only one or two people sharing that little router in the corner. In contrast, a Wi-Fi hotspot could have a lot of people sharing a few transmitters and receivers, and therefore you improve the energy efficiency. So what we can do at a personal level is this. Let's say that I want to download some pictures that my wife took a couple of days ago, and you know they're on her Facebook account or something like that. What I should do is not do it while I'm walking down the street using the 3G network. What I should do is find a Wi-Fi hotspot and do it there and do it through my Wi-Fi connection, because I'll be sharing that with other people. Now, of course, you pay a price for this in that there might be 50 people sharing the hotspot and things are going to go a bit slower than if I had to have that cell all to myself. But, you know, I guess you've got to think about what we can do to help keep that overall energy efficiency up.
There's an interesting human factor thing in there, because I happen to find when I'm out walking or on the train, that's the time when I can catch up on routine little things like checking someone's photos, because it's my non-urgent time and I can do it while walking around. Any suggestions for how we change people's behaviour? Or is that not your department, really?
No, that's a hard one. That's a very hard one. In fact, but it's interesting. We've actually thought about this. The group at the Centre of Energy Efficient Telecommunications looks at things beyond engineering. We've actually got a PhD student looking at the social, environmental and economic impact of the NBN, or should I say ubiquitous broadband, and we're working in conjunction with the Centre of Policy Studies down at the Monash University, and we're constructing an economic model of broadband. So we try and spread our interests beyond that, but we haven't quite gotten into sociology just yet.
Okay.
But there are some interesting conflicts and things we've got to deal with in that area.
The kind of distribution technology itself, either the Wi-Fi hotspots, the cells, how much room for improvement is there in the energy efficiency of those devices that are currently off the shelf?
Yeah, off the shelf.
Off the shelf compared to what you're working on, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
What can we look forward to, I guess, is the question.
If we look towards the work that's been done in Green Touch, which, as I said a minute ago, is this international consortium looking at energy efficiency. The indications there is that with the correct application of advanced technologies, we could improve the energy efficiency of the access wireless access network, getting up to a factor of almost 1,000. Okay, but this is going out some years. Like, we're talking about 2020 technology here. And the reason for that is because, again, 3G and LTE and those technologies are, at this particular point in time, using technologies and techniques which assume you pour out heaps and heaps of power up the antenna and cover lots and lots of area. If you increase the intelligence in the system and enable to, say, steer the beam, so where the user is, you relocate some of the equipment, like the power amplifier goes to the top of the tower. We make the antenna a bit smaller and cover a little bit less area, and so we have lots of smaller cells rather than a couple of big cells. This opens up an opportunity to improve energy efficiency in that area. In Wi-Fi, it's not so simple, because we've already implemented some of the kind of key improvements, and that is reducing the cell size and cranking up the sharing.
Is this all going to be enough to deal with the amount of energy that we're obviously going to start consuming soon?
At the end of the day, I think the answer to that is no. The reason is the following. At this particular point in time, the growth rate in internet traffic is about 30 to 40% per annum. The growth rate in mobile traffic is getting up towards 100% per annum. The track record on improving energy efficiency is fairly short, but there are trends which we've seen. There are things called, like a thing called Moore's Law, which is about improving the energy efficiency or increasing the number of transistors on a chip.
Yep, there will be purists who say, yes, it's just that. It was a statement many years ago about transistors on a chip, and it's become a kind of flag to wave for technology will make everything better, don't worry.
It will not. I can tell you that now. What I was going to say is that Moore's Law has actually been a great friend to us up until recently, but it's getting to the stage where Moore's Law is running out of puff in terms of energy. Okay, now there are some extra little tricks we can do to kind of help us a bit longer, a bit further. We change the material systems, that might help us out a bit. But the reality is that the improvements in energy efficiency that have been secured over the last, say, half a decade or perhaps a decade, are what we call one-off occurrences. Okay, so you find that you have an innovation, you'll use it, and that innovation does it once, but that's it, you've got to think of something new next time. So the energy efficiency improvements in electronics overall is about 12 or 13% per annum. In mobile technologies, about 15 to 20% per annum. And that history is consisted of one-off hits. But, of course, the problem with one-offs is that once they're done, and there's no kind of reusable paradigm.
This is hoping you're just going to have another Star Wars movie make a million, isn't it?
Or 20 million, right.
You know, you're going to run out of droids at some point.
Yeah, that's exactly, we're going to run out of droids. That's exactly right. So what's going to happen is that unless some new paradigm comes up, and I have no idea what it is, right, unless some new paradigm comes up, what's going to happen is we're going to run out of these one-offs, and energy efficiency is going to flatten out. We're not going to keep improving it. And if the demand continues to grow without saturating, then we will be in strife. Now, what ultimately will occur is that demand will saturate. Okay, now, it may not saturate because people get sick of the service. It'll saturate because they get such a lousy service that they basically give up. It's the old story, you know. You open up your laptop, you log onto the local Wi-Fi link, and it just sits there and grinds and grinds and grinds. You give up and walk away. That could be what happens. And it could be because of a couple of things. Either there's not enough equipment out there to keep up with the growth, we need more and more towers to keep up with the growth in mobile. But if, let's say, that can be done, then what you might find is there's just not enough electricity on the planet to keep up. And so we stop deploying towers because there's not enough power to keep putting out new ones, and the system slowly grinds down and people get sick of waiting for their little hourglass to stop clunking away. So the system saturates in one way or another.
That sounded like a full stop. There isn't anywhere we can go from there. Apart from, you know, fire up a few nuclear reactors or something.
Yeah, well, then I guess that
which is always popular.
That could be true. Yes. If you look at kind of the really long-term vision, let's push this way out beyond 2020, which is where Green Touch is going. Way out beyond then, it is an open question as to how we can sustain ongoing exponential growth of internet and information services. I personally don't know how we're going to push it beyond the envelope in that case. Unless something incredible occurs over the coming years in terms of, as I said, producing a paradigm which can be used time and time and time again to improve efficiency, we will be a bit of a roadblock.
Now, the big figures we spoke about before were purely within terms of the proportion of energy that is used within the wireless connecting to cloud services as part of the IT infrastructure. So it was, you know, the bulk of it is in this transmission process. Zooming out, we know that that's a relatively small amount of energy use in the household. Where does this fit in energy use within society as a whole?
Okay, well, within society as a whole, at the moment, the internet consumes about 1% or 2% of the world's electricity generation.
And climbing, presumably? Definitely
climbing. And if we don't pursue improvements in energy efficiency for ICT equipment, we'll be heading up towards about 10% by about 2025. Now, that's a big jump. And it really means that the challenge is on to make sure that ICT doesn't become a real energy monster and produce roadblocks to using ICT to improve society. Now, I should say, on the other side of the coin, there have been some studies looking at ICT technology to improve energy efficiency in other parts of the industry, like smart motors in industry, smart logistics to make sure the trucks go where they do at the shortest distance and therefore minimise their fuel consumption, things like that. And there are indications that the ICT industry can make significant contributions to abating our carbon footprint across the larger industry sector. But the challenge then becomes that to keep ICT providing that, we need to let ICT grow as industry does. And we need to kind of keep an eye on energy efficiency of ICT in that context.
It's an interesting one. It's not totally dismal. Thank you for that. I didn't want to end on a completely dismal note. Dr. Kerry Hinton, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Kerry Hinton from the Centre for Energy Efficient Telecommunications at the University of Melbourne, a joint venture with Alcatel-Lucent's Bell Labs and the Victorian State Government. Episode notes and links to all the things we mentioned, including the Greenpeace and SEAT reports, are at corruptednerds.com, and you can also leave a comment. Well, that's it for episode 4 of the Conversations podcast. Don't forget to subscribe either at iTunes or by RSS in your choice of software, and watch out soon for news of how you can support Corrupted Nerds. I'm Stilgherrian. See you next time.